Hello and welcome to the CG Pro podcast. This is episode 58, and today we have Andre Pilli with us, who's a good friend, a director and digital content creator extraordinaire. If you enjoy what you hear today, you can follow us at becomecgpro.com or in our free Facebook group. Andre, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here. I know we're friends and you've been in the school, and it's an absolute pleasure to have you on. You're an amazing pioneer in this space, and looking forward to our conversation.
Thank you so much for having me, Ed. It's super exciting to be here. Always looked up to you, to your work. The school is really cool. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Thanks, man. Well, I always love to kind of start this off just asking a little bit about how you got here. I know you've done a lot of things. You're a content creator, I think is an interesting term that's used a lot. It's a very broad term to explain a lot of different modalities, I think. But I'd love to hear a little bit from you about how you got to this point. Were there some kind of early inspirations that gave you clues as to which direction you wanted to take?
Yeah, absolutely. It was quite a journey, I have to say. I started off in law school, actually. So it was pretty far from where I am right now. Fortunately for me, I started off, I come from a very conservative family. So, they always wanted me to go to law school, and that's what I did. I think, when you're young, you don't really realize what you really like to do in life. It's such a crazy period in your life. So off to law school I went.
A lot of pressure as well, trying to...
Yes.
16, you go, like, okay, figure out the rest of your life right now.
Absolutely, man. So I went to law school, and in Brazil, I'm from Brazil. In Brazil, it's fairly common for you to find work in your field as soon as you get into college. So it's like a summer job, but you actually work not only in summer, but throughout like school year as well. Then I was going to working at this law firm as an intern, and at the same time going to college. So my life was like 100% law, and I was like, oh my God, it was really heavy for me, having to work for something. And, maybe 10 years down the line, you're going to be eventually going to be happy, right? So what happened was I just left work. I was 21. I'm 31 now. And actually, I was younger, 19. Left work. And at the time, there were still newsstands, in some places in Brazil, mostly. And I saw this beautiful book, the National Geographic Guide to Photography. And there was this guy in the cover. He had a camera, and he was in the middle of the jungle. And I was like, oh man, I want to be that guy. I want to be wherever he is. What do I have to change, right? But at the time, the answer didn't come. But I started reading the book. It had all the principles of photography and the foundations. Speed, aperture, ISO, all that good stuff. And then I started reading the book kind of religiously every day in school. And I was obviously the only kid in law school reading about photography. So that was a sign. And then one day I was in history of law class, and I started feeling really dizzy and started sweating. And my friends took me to the infirmary at the college I was at, and my mom had to come and pick me up because I was feeling really sick. And from that point on, I spent 3 months in a wheelchair. Wow. Which is was very very interesting experience, because it was obviously we did a lot of exams and a lot of things to try to figure out what was happening to me. But throughout those 3 months, I was actually happy because I could read. I could study photography and filmmaking online. So my foundations were always very heavy in self-learning, online learning, and that kind of the opportunities that this type of the schools like yours give to people that, don't have that opportunity to just go to a physical place. And, so I spent 3 months in the wheelchair. At the end of the the length that I was, you know, that I did exams and everything. The doctor came to me and to my mom, and he said, you know, you have to change something in your life drastically, or you're going to have to, you know, it's only going to be downhill from here. That was what, like, you know, my family needed to hear at the time, and myself too, because, you know, I was trying to make it work. But, you know, once I started getting into photography, there was no way back. So I then went to the safe filmmaking school, which is marketing in Brazil, advertising, that kind of stuff, you know. And I spent 2 years there, and I was proficient, obviously, in subjects like photography, filmmaking, etc. Helped the professors all the time. But in things like statistics, man, I was like, I still, to this very day, when I look at an Excel spreadsheet, I get, you know, I get dizzy, and I get, you know. But yeah, so I had that problem in school, and because of a technicality, you know, I applied for NYU. I wanted to leave. I wanted to come to the US because, you know, here the industry is obviously, in the world, this is where you have to be if you want to make your work as a filmmaker. And applied to NYU because of a technicality, of like a grade averages in my college and NYU and whatever. I got in, and I was also an athlete at the time, which helped. And so off I went to New York. And then in New York, I had the same problem at NYU because I didn't like everything that I was being taught, because obviously online or in schools, you know, in college, you don't have a lot of flexibility as to like what you're going to learn and how you're going to learn it. And this is something that I love about being able to kind of, you know, go after your own resources as far as what you're teaching yourself. So I had to do like essays about like blue whales. So things like, you know, biology. And it's like, this is not what I want to do. But at the time, that's when I started my YouTube channel. That's when I got to New York with about like 500 or 1,000 subscribers. And then I started really committing to it, doing daily vlogs. And that was like 2014. So daily vlogs were just starting to become huge. Casey Neistat was starting off in New York, which then he, for people that don't know, he is kind of the father of daily vlogs, basically. So off I went, and then I did like 100 videos in 100 days. It's like one a day, and then I would edit at night, and then I shoot for the whole day. And that really gave me a lot of safety and I don't know, confidence in whatever I am, like however things are going, I can always make content. Even if things are really bad, I can always make content about things going bad. So that's a philosophy that that I always apply to my projects. Fortunately, never had to do it, but
people like that too. Like they like the honesty and realness of making content. They don't want fluff and shiny, polished versions of things. They want the real story more often.
100%. And that's what we were kind of finding out in 2014. And you know, I could always do this blend of very polished content, but also very personable, which is something that brands were looking for. Still are, fortunately, but they were looking for at the time, because these influencers were like, they had a huge audience of like 10, 20 million subscribers, and no director could cater to a brand that wanted to work with them, because it either looks like TV, or it's too, it's just too informal, too kind of sketchy and not very polished for a brand to work, you know, within those constraints. So I was kind of the person that could navigate both worlds, because I was a creator as well as a director. And it all started with very big Brazilian influencers coming to New York and asking me for help. Like, how can I shoot content like you're shooting? I know you're just one person, but it looks like it's many more, and I just want to learn. So I started helping them. Like, I took them to B&H. I helped them edit and, you know, just walk them through the process, and they, in exchange, they shot videos with me. And I had, like, I remember one day I shot a video with one creator that had 10 million subscribers, and I had, and then it was 2,000 at the time. And I got 100,000 subscribers in 2 weeks in 2015, which is like, which is very, you know, crazy.
Affiliate marketing.
Yes, that's what it was. And also we can talk about, you know, eventually the downside of all of that, you know, adrenaline. But, you know, these creators started to recommend me to brands that I can work, that I could work with. They were working with Adidas, McDonald's, Universal Studios, these huge, you know, companies that it would take, you know, 10, 20 years for any director to work with. Like my first paid job was for Adidas. And, you know, I think I found a way in that was like from the side door or whatever. And at the time also I won a competition called My Road Reel, which they were giving a big cash prize for the first place. And it was like a worldwide competition. So I shot this movie, you know, by myself, like I did all my vlogs and submitted to the competition. And then we, you know, all Brazilians kind of connected with the cause, I guess, and they voted for me. So I won this competition, and by winning it, I had funds to start a production company. But I couldn't do it in the US because I was a student. And so my next step was, okay, I have to go back to Brazil to start a company, and then I can get a work visa, right? Then I can apply. If I build a good enough portfolio, I could apply for the O-1 visa, which is, you know, the basically the work visa here for artists. That's basically what I did. I had a very interesting conversation with my mom. She's always been a huge part of my life, and she's my biggest supporter until today. I should say she and my wife, because my wife is also my DP, and you know, which is an interesting subject to talk about too. But yeah, and then, you know, my mom said, you know, I trust you at this point in time. You did everything, like you're building something, obviously. And then I went to Brazil to open a production company, and the first job was at the Rio Olympics with Adidas, and that was obviously super cool. And then that's the first stage of my career. If you have, obviously, I can go into the second one, and which leads me to today. But yeah,
very cool. Yeah, well, there's a lot to unpack there, but I think really the big takeaway from me is to following your sense of your own purpose and doing what's right for you and seeing where it goes. I think it's very hard to figure out what you want to do, and it also changes throughout your life as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me it is so instinct based, and at a time you don't have any instincts. But for me, whenever I until this very day, like I'm very driven by the fact when I see someone that is unhappy in their lives, I'm very driven to give them the opportunity that they need and trust them. I don't feel that young people are trusted enough nowadays, and there's so much raw talent, and you don't need like years of experience or a huge resume. It's a lot about the connection you have to the person and the willingness that this person has to improve and the capacity that they have to teach themselves through schools, through online learning and everything. You know, and today the whole system is structured so that, you know, self-learners and people that learn independently and through online schools and everything, they can succeed more than if they go through college, at least in our field, I would say.
The real proof is in showing evidence that you're able to do something as opposed to qualifications necessarily.
Yes, precisely. But yeah, so then I went to Brazil, and in Brazil, I just started, you know, continued creating content, and I started to leverage this relationship with brands in a way that could benefit my portfolio. So, and there was these like crazy opportunities. I remember being in the home of a friend of mine that was a big content creator, and he was doing a video for McDonald's. Like McDonald's paid for like a sponsored video of his. And there was no one helping him. There was no one helping him shoot. And I was like, man, let me help you. But he's like, how much? Having McDonald's on my website, that is all the payment that I can need. At that point in my life, at least, right? Because, you know, I was just starting off and having these big brands, you know, work, you know. And then so I started helping him with content for McDonald's. And then Universal Studios saw it. That was like the biggest project that I did at the start of my career, because it was like a 2 month long project of daily vlogs that would promote a feature film that this his name is Christian, that his that this my friend was, he was a, there was this feature film inspired by his life and he was acting in it, and Universal Studios was doing the film, and they, oh, what kind of marketing campaign we can do, and daily vlogs. So that's what we did. But that's kind of how things started moving, until I had this opportunity that really changed my life. And you know, I had this agency represent me, and they, Jaguar at the time, were lending sports cars to influencers for like 2 Instagram posts in Brazil. And I was like, that's nice. I wish, you know, I want to have a, Jaguar. Yeah. I want to drive an F type for a weekend. That would be cool. I was always a huge fan of Top Gear, the car show.
Oh, cool.
And there's this episode where they race Bugatti and a jet, like a military jet.
I remember that one.
That inspired me a lot. So I was like, okay, I have this Jaguar for a weekend. What can I do? what can I do, man, with this that will really be interesting? And I had
to find a jet.
Well, in Brazil, third world country, you do what you can. So it was more than good enough. A friend of mine, he flew, he had a YouTube channel and flew helicopters.
Oh, cool.
So I reached out to him and he was like, yeah, sure. Well, I'll do this in exchange for I'll race you. And he loved cars too. I'll race you. And then in exchange for the a link of, you know, of his channel in the comment section of the Jaguar video, he showed up with the helicopter. And we had a pilot, we had the helicopter. We couldn't just race it on the streets. So I did an Instagram stories and say, guys, anyone has like a racing track available? Well, you know, you never know who's watching. So and then Goodyear, the tire company, saw it, and they had this test track close to the city that I lived. So we had all the pieces of the puzzle, and this all happened in 3 days. I had no idea what was a script at the time. Like, no, it was like just bullet points for me. Never done a production anywhere close, you know, anywhere close to this. And the only money that I had was about like $80 to fill up the tank with gas, with like premium gas at a time, because it was a sports car. So
yeah,
off we went to the test track. But the thing is, I had to pass the test if I were to drive the car, because I never even knew the concept of stunt driver existed. So, and obviously I wanted to drive the car because that would be super cool. I was just like, I want to race the helicopter myself. and that's the thing about, yeah, that's the thing about like social media. It puts you in places you never expect, which is super interesting. But yeah, so then
you passed the test.
I passed the test, fortunately. And then I raced the helicopter. Obviously the Jaguar won for marketing purposes, but also in real life, because like the top speed of the helicopter is obviously, you know, higher, but at, you know, 0 to 100, 0 to 60 actually is yeah. But so that was super interesting. And then, you know, Jaguar were expecting 2 photos on my Instagram too. And I said, hey guys, I did something different. And I sent it to them. I did the photos too, if you guys want them, but here's the video. And then the marketing manager saw it and she was like, what happened? Like, how did this is like, you know, there was no Mr. Beast at the time, no one doing any type of like more elaborate production. And they were like, they were in shock. And then they sent it to the headquarters in the UK. The CEO saw it. He's like friends with the Queen and Sir, whatever. And then it was super interesting because he said, listen, this is the future of the company, and I'd like to buy this to be an ad that would play worldwide, that is going to be played all around the world. And I was, wow, that's crazy. And obviously, like, the licensing fee wasn't that high for a production of that, you know, scope. It wouldn't pay the production, but it paid for the licensing of the content. And also, again, building the portfolio, right? It's like that case study that will, you know, help me get into any kind of agency.
Make it so, in front of more eyeballs through that channel as well as your own. Yeah,
precisely. And if you guys type in on YouTube, Jaguar versus helicopter, I think, yeah, I'll be there. So, And then, you know, after this, I started building my, you know, I really invested in my portfolio and everything, and met my now wife, who started off as my DP, and, you know, she's still the DP of everything that I do. And then we applied for the O1 and O2 visa to come to LA. And that's I would say that's the third stage. But yeah, there's a lot to unpack as always.
Yeah. Well, it's really cool. Yeah. I mean, my own journey into computer graphics was, I thought I wanted to be a filmmaker, and I ended up in commercials initially too, because I really wanted a lot more variety and exposure, and wanted to be more of a generalist at the start there. And film was a bit too specialist for me, but commercials really ended up being a great place to play, because they're mini films, and they're telling a story, and you go through all the processes, different output. I think it's really interesting what you're bringing up, because the world of marketing is changing. It's going a lot towards the influencer and away from the, maybe, I mean, it still includes a big ad agencies doing campaigns, but influencer marketing is huge now, and it's allowing people to have this kind of life where you can make content, grow a following, and then be able to do things for brands. If you're an aspiring content creator these days, what would you recommend to people to start, where to start?
Yeah, I think obviously there's always the typical just start, you know, kind of mindset for content creation, and, you know, that thing of like being a self-started and self-motivated is very, very important. I think it's essential. It's something that is going to drive you, regardless of you wanting it or not. It's kind of, I have to do this. And if people from the outside, a lot of times they're not going to see why you're doing it. You're only going to be the one knowing why you're doing things until other people start seeing the results of what you're doing. So having that mentality is super important. And, you know, people that have it, they already know they have it. It's not a question of, oh, should I, would I? It's like they just go and do it. And obviously there's always the opportunity to just go and test it out too, which is the beauty of content creation. It's very, there's no, and that's the contrast with the film industry, right? There's no gatekeeping in content. The only gate being kept is yours or your own. Like, you have to open it and get in, but it's like the key is in your hands. And as opposed to like the film industry, which is something that I'm starting to navigate at a higher level for the first time in my life now, it is completely different. But as far as content making, it really is about you having that knowledge about yourself and what you really, really, really like in life. And a good lead for me was always like, okay, when you get home or when you stop doing something you don't want to do, what do you go do after that? What is your, you know, to relax? And that's also a problem, because then you can't relax anymore, because that thing is not yours anymore to relax. But yeah, that's basically the idea.
So essentially focusing on what you want to make and what you're passionate about, not people often ask me this about computer graphics as well, in terms of making reels or getting into certain industries, is what should I do? You know, there's a lot of should about people's kind of career path, at least from what I hear. And what I usually say is, as well as, to lean into what you love and focus on that, because that's what will have you do it in your spare time. It sounds like the same thing in your experience.
Yeah. The thing you think it's too good to be true, if you can make a living out of it, usually that's it. Which is hard, but yeah.
Yeah, and there's lots of should, and you had a lot of should as well in your own experience. You were supposed to be a lawyer, and I'm sure that was interesting. What was that like for dealing with your parents and wanting you to be a lawyer and trying to be an artist?
I mean, for me, it was an interesting transition because obviously, like when you're growing up, your parents are such a huge force in your life. And the idea is that they will continue to be as you grow older. And they never lose that kind of, you never lose the connection with them. But also, it was an interesting transition because my mother, she wanted to be an artist. She wanted to be an architect, but she found that in her life, for things to work, she needed to run a like a business, like a really like a more traditional kind of business, you know. So she had to make that choice. And I think for me, instinctively, that's what happened at first. No, you have to do it too. You have to, like, you know, be, you know, do a work on a real job. But today, I think I became her artistic outlet too, which is very cathartic in a way. And that's kind of how things turn out in life. I've, you know, you're, I think I never, I, you know, I have planned one day, I hope to have kids. I don't have any kids right now, but it is interesting to think about them in this sense, like they're gonna live things that I hope I have lived. So yeah. So it's great now.
They'll
I love
rebel in
her.
their own way.
Absolutely.
Like, no, you should be a content creator. Why do you want to be a lawyer?
That's gonna be me. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I always joke with my wife, like, imagine our kids is gonna go into like finance, you know, like, please don't, man. Like, you know, we work so hard for to be here, like in the film industry. It's just like so easy for you now. No. But yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your transition from creating a successful following in content creation and influencer marketing, I guess, essentially. Where did your own those were your own creative endeavors. So I guess you were making your own films. By doing that, you were creating your own films. Tell me about how it started to transition into wanting to move more into, I guess, professional film or longer format.
For me, I think it was always an illusion that I knew how to tell a story. In content creation and YouTube, there is this, you're always motivated by the spectacle. People are going to comment on it. You're going to be praised by, you know, intense music and beautiful, whatever that means, images. But so there is this kind of surface, it's always on the surface level. It's rare. There are very rare content creators that actually tell a story. And they always, you know, throw the word out there, oh, storytelling, I'm telling a story, but there's no real sense of progression. And there's no structure inside most types of content. So the person that really pushed me towards that direction was my wife, because she came from a more traditional film background. She went to film school, and she's always been very passionate about the classics and everything. And me as a content creator, like my references, like are God of War and The Last of Us. Like that's the type of story that I connect with. It's not like the you know, Kurosawa or Hitchcock and those. Obviously, I watch them because it's like homework, but you know, it's not. Oh, I don't connect with them as I connect with like digital entertainment, interactive entertainment, or any modern contemporary movies. But the thing for me was always, you know, that transition. Now it's like, okay, I did, like, and I think the thing that really consolidated this shift in me was my first short film, which is, you know, They Come From the Sky, and it was, I shot it last year, and throughout the process of the film, I went through a series of emotional breakdowns, and it was extremely hard for me. But at the same time, Anna, she kept me kind of centered, because the thing about being a creative that is in a leadership position is there is not a lot. Obviously, like your instincts play a huge role as to your direction, but you always have to know how to explain every decision. You have to put words into instincts and, you know, turn them into something concrete so that other people can understand it and you can understand it. You can put it into a structure. Something that I learned is that it's not bad that story has structure, because there is this rhythm, this storytelling rhythm that people are connect with throughout all of human history, that is very specific. And the rhythm is like music. You can't really use different scales or different tones depending on what you're doing together, because they're just going to be weird, dissonant. It's like we as humans are not going to listen to it. So this is kind of how I learned about story, because I was so weird about so scared about like my stories being a formula, and oh man, everyone already did this once. But the beauty is like in innovating with the formula, because that is what is going to make people, you know, listen to your story. So that's kind of what I learned with that process. And I remember a few weeks before we shot the short film, which was extremely challenging. We can go into it. But my wife came to me and said, "You have no idea what the story is about." I remember we sitting at the dinner table, working on the script, on the shot list and everything. And she was like, "You have no clue. You go do whatever you have to do, but you have to think about what this is about, because this is not it." And that's basically like my first step into the more, you know, storytelling film industry, I'd say.
That's cool. It was probably a frustrating moment. No, what you wanted to hear.
Yes.
I'm sure. I gone through pre-production on things, and so like, I don't get it. I'm like, you should get it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But really, the reality there is that stories are about that they're not just being told for their own sake. They're being told for a reason. It's communication, right? It's really education is what it really boils down to. You're trying to teach something through story. That's what storytelling is has always been for. And you're trying to get somebody to a moment, an understanding, a feeling, really, is what you're trying to get them to. Is if you boil it down to one single thing, it's like there is a feeling in the middle of a movie. That's what a skillful director is trying to get their audience to, is to that feeling.
Precisely.
Things serve that journey to that feeling.
Coming from commercials, what I learned is that in film and commercials, depending on the commercial, but it's not that different. The difference is that in film, the product is the story. So that's what you have to work on. That's what you have to sell. And selling is teaching. So yeah, totally agree.
Marketing is storytelling and education, the same thing, really. I think that's when I started to almost like marketing, where I thought I hated it previously. I was like, it's really storytelling and education. And as long as you're doing it genuinely and you're doing it because in something you believe in and you're trying to produce for the world that you think is beneficial to the world. So tell us about the short film.
Yeah. So I was always connected with the themes of technology and nature, because oftentimes they're portrayed as contrary to each other. And it was a love that started with me, you know, growing up on the city as well as in nature. Like I lived in a big city in Brazil, but also on the weekends, I always went to the forest and you know, the jungle and everything to kind of spend my weekends there with my family. So I always loved technology growing up. I remember like I was very big nerd at school and very isolated. I remember my Game Boy being my best friend really growing up, and games and technology in general, it was always with me. So I was like, why does it have to be contrary to nature? It makes no sense whatsoever. And and then today, obviously, the climate is very delicate around AI and technology and everything. But I do feel that, you know, I am a big, how can I say this? I am a big fan of the potential that AI has for civilization. And that is not something, a very popular opinion, but I would say that anything that can consolidate a perspective and a point of view that is mathematically better for the environment and the world has a space, has a positive space in society. So anyways, their experiments with technology and nature that I've always felt really connected to. And then going into this short film, I wanted to tell a story that kind of touched on that a little bit. The perception of like how harmful technology is on a surface level, but at the end of the day, the ones doing harm are humans and not really technology. So it's the theory of not only the short film is that not actually it goes way deeper in the feature, but the feature script, but it's that technology can be either a mirror or a bridge. It will reflect human nature or reveal our flaws. And that is something that I always wanted to touch on. So I went into this film and I needed the most isolated, raw place that really reflected what nature was. And I needed to integrate that with technology. So I don't know how much I would spoil about the short film because it's going to be out soon on the Alter and Dust sci-fi YouTube channel, which is super cool. I just signed the contract yesterday. But it is, yeah, thank you, man. And it is about that, you know, it is about technology and obviously AI, but AI having a better grasp on what the environment is than any human could ever have. So.
Positive AI story.
Yes.
I think we need more of those. It's interesting. I like the idea that I know there's a lot of controversy around AI and a lot of confusion and a lot of rightful questioning and caution. But it's interesting. There's that, I forget who said it now, but there's that that kind of idea or cliche or whatever that to solve a problem, you can't use the same level of understanding that created the problem in the first place. You're suggesting there that perhaps some other intelligence or something which isn't us who made the problems could help us solve the problems.
Absolutely. There are people doing amazing things with AI and nature too. Like there are people that, you know, they developed studies that they can now interpret animals and, you know, the way animals communicate to each other and the patterns that, you know, fungi have when growing that can only be interpreted because of AI. And that's the type of thing that I'm really a fan of. And I think, you know, it's weird to do like pro AI propaganda, but I feel that, you know, there are positives to it. And even like going to more, I would say, divisive topics, I would say like that tools like ChatGPT, at least for me, were that, you know, English is not my first language. And I always had this huge block when like, oh, am I good enough to write a story in the language that I wasn't, you know, born, you know, understanding? Whenever I write, I'm at the end of my feature script now, and I'm writing, and I've always have conversations with ChatGPT to understand, like, so is this how an American would write it? Is this how a proficient screenwriter would write it? So it's always a dialogue between me and AI, not only ChatGPT, as other AI too. And that really, I think, helped me bring this story to life. And maybe if I, you know, as a Portuguese speaking person, there are other stories from around the world that can be brought to life because of this technology now. Not because it's going to write the script for you, but because it will give you the confidence to put your work out there, because it is a very safe kind of perspective that you have on your work. You're not, you know, you're not giving into an executive and then the executive says, no, this is the worst thing ever. You're not even like, you're not native while you're writing a script. Anyways, so this has been positive for me.
That's cool. Yeah. So essentially it's like you're saying that the power, it has that other power to be able to help cross-cultural storytelling.
Yes. Yeah. I'd say so. I'd say that's the biggest power, but obviously like, there are people that make a living screenwriting. Hopefully I'll be that you know, one of the things of my work is going to be that one day. But, and it is very scary to have something that can take your job, but it's nowhere near that point yet. Obviously, it can get there. So that's why it's scary. And there are assurances that need to be made that, you know, but at the same time, it gives a lot of opportunities to people like me. Mm. So I'm thankful.
Right. It's also empowering to be able to get some of the things out of the way, essentially.
Yeah.
Same on the digital side. There's lots of things that in visual effects that are very time consuming and stop independent film makers from using visual effects.
Absolutely. And if you look into procedural technology in Unreal, like the latest updates, for instance, I think it's a version of that. You know, it's something that for me, Unreal has been such an interesting tool to use to it's like we were talking about, right? If you're creative, you always have to learn to know how to put words into your intuition, like to define what you're feeling and what you're going to say. And Unreal Engine has really helped me. So when we were doing our classes and everything, for me, it was such an amazing experience because, like, it's so intuitive. It's like, it reminds me a little bit of playing The Sims way back when, you know, but on a much different level. But it also, like, that was the foundation for me to create new worlds and everything, and Unreal and Blender too. They're great tools for me to showcase my vision, not only to productions that I'm already involved with, but also to investors, which is a big part of this whole thing, right?
Right. Helping you to pitch your idea without necessarily doing what people have always had to do, which is to go out and employ an expensive team of people to realize your pre-production to get to that stage. You can actually have more agency in it yourself.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that you say this because I've worked with concept artists on a few pitches before, and there's no bigger joy. His name is Nick Stath. He's doing some very interesting things today. And there's a huge joy in collaborating with another human and creating something out of nothing. And I can't wait for me to have the resources to bring a human into the equation. But for me to make that viable, I first use the machine. So the machine is a step in the process for me to get to hire humans when I can, you know, when I get the finances. But it is, you know, it is a very low cost, and it will eventually, in this instant at least, allow me to eventually work with artists, and then they can use AI, they can use whatever they want. But I think there's something in a collaboration between two humans that is very hard to emulate in any other place.
And there's also that for me, that term AI was used to describe machine learning at this point largely, which is not really intelligent. It's not that it's not cool or clever or complex in some way, but it's not really... It's not a person. It's not inventing something. It's really doing something that's the only thing that it can do.
Yeah, absolutely.
A person can throw you curveballs, or like you described in your story, life threw you a curveball, and it had a big impact early on in your direction, in your path, in having something happen to you, being put into a wheelchair. I'm sure really influenced the way that your path took, and that's something that only really a person or being in nature can do. Working with a human, they're unpredictable, you know, especially if you work with kids, they're even more unpredictable. I think that's necessary for that that creativity.
Absolutely. And I have worked with, it's funny that I say kids, because I've worked with two kids for this short film, and it was interesting because I made very bad choices on the, depending on your perspective, because I chose the rainiest place in the northern continent to shoot, which is Washington.
It must be Seattle.
It was 4 hours to it was Olympic National Park, so where they shot Forks, where they shot the oh my god, like the biggest vampire franchise of all time. I forgot. I know it in Portuguese, but you know, Edward and those guys, the werewolf. Oh my god, man. What is the name of the movie?
Okay. Not Dracula.
Yeah, not Dracula. It is anyways, okay. But anyway, they shot it there. Twilight, thank you so much. Yes, that's it.
Somebody in the chat just said that.
I was like, thank you, chat. Yeah.
By the way, chat people, feel free to ask questions. We're live. So do throw those in before we wrap.
Absolutely.
Sorry, keep going.
But yeah, so yeah, I chose Kids and Rain for the first short film. So, you know, because we didn't have budget to build sets. So I needed the world to be believable. And nature obviously was almost a character in it. And we wouldn't be able to shoot it in a studio. So. And I was very confident in documentary filmmaking and more like a run and gun type of thing. So let's go into the most beautiful place we can that will really help sell the nature side of things. My dream was to go to Olympic National Park, but before we went there, we tried Northern California, but it wasn't raw enough. It wasn't just completely in the middle of nowhere. But there, when we were visiting a location, we found two kids. They were the kids from the owner of the location, and they had this allure to them, this gravitational pull, like these wonderful kids. So they smile, they're super intelligent, and I talked to their parents. First thing I said to his dad, their dad, actually it's a girl and a boy, Gemma and Nico. And their dad is Mateo. So I Mateo was like showing us around the property, and then Nico was like squatting at the side of the road barefoot with a bow and an arrow. And in the story, the humans are hunters. And I was like, Mateo, does your kid want to be an actor? Please. And he said, yeah, absolutely. He's very open about the opportunities that their kid, Nico is 8 and Gemma was 10 at the time. He's very open. And I said, okay, let's bring them both, because they've never acted, and in case one goes wrong, we can, you know, the other one can try. And you know, they traveled with us to Forks, to the national park, and it was Nico. It's funny because the story is about human. Nico's role is a human that hunts androids, but he's a very young kid, so he obviously is not. He has a very like pure perspective on the world, so he's very reluctant about doing it because the androids, they really look and feel like humans, and it was like, I don't want to do this, but he really hunts in real life. He's a 10-year-old kid that walks barefoot with a bow and arrow and just hunts and gathers and does all everything. So when he was playing the character, he was enjoying it so much that I was like, Nico, you can't enjoy this, man. It's like this is not it. And then his sister took, you know, gave it a go, and she did wonderful. But yeah, it was her first time, and that was quite an adventure. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, yeah, kudos to you for this. What they say, don't work with children or animals. So
yes,
kudos to you for doing that early on. I know that there's the short film about to come out. What's next after the short film?
Yeah, so the short film was made, I think that kind of mindset of me trying to make projects happen as far as like marketing and going to agencies and pitching was like, okay, if I do a short film, it has to be a proof of concept for something bigger. So that was the idea, was like, it was to be a proof of concept. And so we submitted the film for a lot of festivals, and American Cinematheque just started it's the first year they're running a festival called Proof Film Festival. It's going to be here in LA, the Coover Theater, from the 20th of October through to the 22nd of October. And it is obviously a very prestigious institution, and we were selected. We were super, I was like, yes. Thank you, man. It was quite a journey until, because like it takes so long for you to know if what you're doing is right or wrong. When you look back, it's all, oh yeah, it makes sense. But looking forward, you never know what's going to happen. And that was kind of a strong kind of, you know, a yes towards my decisions. Anyways, and then this is a festival where executives and the jury and everyone is very keen on turning those projects into features. And the idea of the festival is very interesting. You play your short film, and then right after it, you have like a 1 minute and 30 second mini pitch, basically. And the interesting thing about this pitch is that it's video. And I have over 700 videos I made for YouTube. So I am very comfortable with presenting ideas on, you know, online. This gave me an edge that I wasn't expecting to on the film industry. So I did the pitch. I did the, obviously the short film is, it was selected and ready. It's going to be playing on the 20th. It's going to be opening the festival, and you know, I'm super excited. And also I had to, you know, have a plan for the feature film, for the feature, right? So never wrote a script before in my life. And that was early this year when I met with this producer, Sam. We were always talking about doing something together. He went to a few sets of mine, and you know, he was like, okay, let's he saw the short film, and I'll help you make this happen. And he's done big projects and everything, so I was very thankful for that. And that was like February, so I never wrote a script in my life, and I knew that the story, I had to write it if I wanted to make it happen. And you know, I googled, first thing when I got home was like, okay, how to write a script, and screenwriting mentors. And that's when I had a lot of you know, was very fortunate to find, I would say, three great screenwriter mentors. One of them is Don Hewitt, and Donald has worked with Miyazaki in Spirited Away, and he's a USC professor. So he understood the idea, and having worked with Miyazaki and everything, is like nature is a very prominent in his work. And we started working on this together throughout the last 8 months, and we were very, I know he was, you know, a pillar for me to be able to execute this, because he helped me structure the idea. My problem was never having ideas, was always like grounding them, I think, as most creative people. It's like, yeah, we can have ideas, but how do you structure them? That's another thing. But yeah, the script is, you know, people are reacting very well to the first draft. I'm happy with it. Don has played a huge role in it, and I've had other mentors alongside him. One of them is Simon, that teaches at UCLA, and the other one is Tyler, that has a great screenwriting YouTube channel. For me, it's the best screenwriter YouTube channel there is. So I'm meeting with them on a weekly basis, and they all, you know, and basically I built my curriculum, I guess, for me to learn screenwriting.
Amazing. So that's the Culver Theater on October 20th. And yes. And it's the Alter and Dust presents section.
No, funny enough, Alter. I just signed with them for the short film to be on their YouTube channel. Later, I would say by the end of the year, we'll be there. But on the festival itself, it's not going to be on their okay. Programming. It's going to be the first one on the channel at 6 p.m. on the 20th. Yeah, October.
Oh, cool.
Culver Theater.
It's, Limitless.
Yes, Limitless. That's right. The block. Yeah, that's
looking at the website right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And it now makes sense why the Canva is the sponsor, and because it's a pitch.
Yes, yeah, it is a pitch type of thing.
Right.
Yeah, precisely. Cool. So I'm prepared. I want one tip for anyone trying to network. There is this. It's not an ad, but there are NFC business cards, essentially. I'm doing Popple, which is this one, but you obviously can pick any other that you like. And it is super interesting because obviously my movie is about technology. So whenever my business card has technology in it, you're already telling a little bit of the story of like who you are. And you have, it's interesting because once you touch the other person's like phone with it, it already opens up like a mini website with the short, the trailer, email, You know, I wish I could put my Zelle there too, so we can get things, you know, wire transfer information. But yeah, well, that's basically it. So I'm excited, man.
Very cool. Yeah, if I'm around,
we'll see. I'd love if we can
show up.
I'd love to see you guys there. Absolutely, man.
Yeah, that'd be cool. So, and the name of the short.
Yeah, the name of the short is "They Come from the Sky." Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. And so you basically have locked and loaded the which is smart, having that the feature ready in the pocket for anyone who's interested to be able to follow up on the success of the first piece. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Being prepared, you know, I think it's an interesting business model. Proof has been doing an amazing job at like preparing us for the festival. We had a mentorship session with Damien Chazelle, and he obviously famously did Whiplash, started with a short, and then, you know, he did a feature.
Oh, that was a short to start with?
Yeah, it was a short. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a great movie.
It was amazing. It was really interesting. And then, you know, we walked through a lot of the details with him of like what to expect in a pitching session and everything. But obviously, like, being prepared is everything. You know, having everything, the script and the idea and the concept, and being able to explain how you're going to produce it. And again, like, I think it always comes down to the very thing that prompted me to become a creator in the first place. My first video on my YouTube channel is an unboxing of like a tablet. And it is like technology that drove me to make content. And now it's technology that drives me to make films. So I think once you've managed to tap into that vein, you can tap into it for the rest of your life. And it's hopefully going to make your work unique.
Yeah, what's your guide in sort of seeing all of the possibilities there are out in the world? There's tons of things you could do. What's your guide? How do you tell which is the next one for you?
Yeah, I think it's a very it's a very instinctive thing for you to do. It's like, for me, it's what inspires me the most, what drives me to want to be closer to that. For Japanese was that for me. Japanese was like, I really wanted to be in Japan right now, but I can't because of work and everything. So that was like 4 years ago. And then what's the next best thing that I can do is like to learn Japanese, to feel closer to it.
Yeah.
Feel closer to whatever you want to be and whatever you want to, you know, whatever inspires you. Like, look into the paths towards that. You know, if you're, you know, it's like religion, for instance. There are sacred scriptures for every religion. You have, if religion is your inspiration, is like, you know, Japan or whatever, you have to find your way into it through knowledge. And hopefully
experience.
And, yeah, experience. And fortunately, we have the internet today. We have technologies. So
you can kind of dabble experientially.
Yes,
easier than we used to have to.
Absolutely,
very hard to go see another country.
Absolutely,
a few years.
It can be harmful, depending on how you approach it. Like I've done sometimes. Like one of the things that I have worked on throughout my life was like starting and stopping things. Like I've done bowling classes, I've done like table tennis classes, the most weird classes ever. Which is positive, trying things, different things, but it's also important to kind of monitor yourself. As to like, okay, I have to stick to some things, otherwise the results are not going to be there. Depending on the results you want, obviously, if you want to try 100 things, that's your goal, go for it. But it's always something that is on my mind.
Is there a feeling that could sum it up, like when you're feeling an idea?
That's a good question, man. For me, it's like what I think everyone has their own. This need to express things that is as important as like breathing or any vital thing that you do on a day-to-day basis. For a director, what I have learned is it's not one single paintbrush. We need to be painting with like 10 paintbrushes at the same time. But obviously, we're not as proficient within these lanes. But for me, this is like my expression in life. It's like it gives me the most joy. Like there is nothing that gives me more happiness than being able to express myself artistically through directing something.
The feeling, man.
The feeling. Joy. Yes, joy. Joy. That's where what you it feel is. Joy. Yes.
Well, I feel like in that idea that's a tremendous takeaway. Go follow your joy.
Yes.
That's a great guide. Is there anything else that you would like to share? Any place people can follow your work or find out more about you?
Yeah, absolutely. There is my my website, pilli.film, pilli.film. That is my production company. And I have andre.pilli.film. That is more of a personal website and, you know, has my portfolio and everything. Social media, my YouTube channel is Pilli Films. And on IG, I would love to interact with you guys on the DMs and everything. So feel free. If there's any question or anything, it's instagram.com/Andre_Pilli. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Amazing. Well, Andre, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. As always, I've missed working with you, and I hope we get to do that again at some point. But it's been super cool to see your journey over the last couple of years and to get to do this and see all the cool things that you're putting out into the world. It's very, very, very cool.
It was an amazing conversation, and I hope people enjoyed it as much as I did. And whatever you guys are doing is amazing. I've learned so much at the school, and thank you so much for everything, man.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. We do it because of joy. That's our guide and why we do this. So it gives me a lot of joy to be here today and to work in the school. And yeah, thank you again for your time and for what you're doing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You bet. And thank you also to our audience. Thank you for being here today and sharing this time with us. We will be back again in another couple of weeks. I have an open day coming up for the school fairly soon. It is on October 17th. So if you want to come and check us out as a school, it's a free open day. Check out the website, becomecgpro.com. Follow us in our Facebook group. And yeah, go out and find your joy. I hope that you all do that. And we're here for you if we can be. See you all again soon. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.